Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Wednesday, April 7th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Scott.
And I'm Noelle Swan.
It wasn't the waitress's fault, but she bore the cost. At each table in the Glenbrook Brewery in Morristown, New Jersey, there's a sign that says seating is limited to 90 minutes due to COVID-19 capacity restrictions, currently at 50% in the state. It's a common practice. Time limits allow restaurants to turn over as many tables as possible in hopes of making a profit. In the U.S., an estimated 110,000 restaurants have gone out of business during the pandemic. After an $86 meal for four last Friday, a disgruntled Glenbrook patron left no tip for his server, a nurse in graduate school working more than one job. Scrawled on the receipt, "Don't kick paying customers out after 90 minutes." But the story doesn't end there. When a photo of the receipt with the word zero on the tip line was posted in a community Facebook page by a waitress from another establishment, folks responded. A local business owner started collecting tips, nearly $2,000, for the stiffed server. The waitress, Beth, she didn't give her last name, told NBC New York, "The public support and outpouring, the kind comments, just the things people say, bring me to tears." She plans to share 20% of the total with her fellow servers and give the rest back to the community. The natural response to injustice is compassion, empathy, and a desire to help. Nicely done, Morristown. Now, today's stories. Our first story. Even as the U.S. tallies record national debts, we look at why some economists have shifted their views about the dangers of big debt, at least for now.
While the economy is roaring back and the pandemic looks like it might finally ease, one troubling trend remains. The United States is piling up debt as never before. Federal deficits in 2020 and 2021 are certain to be the biggest relative to GDP since World War II. By 2031, the federal debt will reach an all-time record share of the nation's economy, the Congressional Budget Office forecasts, even if current spending doesn't change. Yet economists appear less concerned than they were 5 years ago. And Democrats, and even some Republican policymakers, have plans for even more government spending. One reason is that economic recovery has trumped debt concerns. Another is that interest rates are so low that the costs of government borrowing are almost nil. The very big question is how lasting these shifts in policy really are. No one knows, but Alan Viard of the right-leaning American Enterprise Institute predicts, "The political parties will continue to do their cyclical thing. Your deficits are bad, my deficits are good. Absent a bipartisan consensus to keep a lid on spending, the debt will continue to grow." This story was reported by Laurent Belsey for The Monitor.
We like to explore the unexpected. In this case, amid all of the challenges of the pandemic and dark forecasts, here's some light. The U.S. suicide rate this past year took a turn for the better.
Despite concern that the pandemic would lead to a spike in self-harm, deaths from suicide last year fell to a five-year low, according to a new report from the National Vital Statistics System at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Dropping from 47,511 to 44,834, a 5.6% decrease, the total number of suicides in 2020 marked a second straight year of decline, after three consecutive years of increase. The report's numbers are still provisional, and full data, complete with demographic breakdowns, won't be available until late this year. The reasons for the decline are not yet clear. Notwithstanding, the decrease marks a rare bit of good health news in 2020, says lead author and health scientist Farida Ahmad. She cautions that 2020 is difficult to compare to other years. Still, given a lot of the chatter about mental health and the conversation surrounding it last year, she says, the total runs counter to what she initially expected. While total deaths rose precipitously in 2020 due to the pandemic, Americans can take the drop in self-harm as encouragement amid a year of loss. This story was reported by Noah Robertson for The Monitor.
What does a national experiment in giving all children, regardless of family income, free meals at public schools look like? The pandemic offers us a live test of what works or doesn't.
Ever since March 2020, when the pandemic was declared, schools across the United States have been ground zero in a massive accidental experiment in universal free meals. All public school children are, for the first time, experiencing equal access to food, no questions asked. But the idea of providing universal free meals requires a certain shift in thought and budgets that not everyone agrees with. The National School Lunch Program was created to provide meals for children from low-income families, period, says Jonathan Butcher, who researches education policy at the conservative-leaning Heritage Foundation. While opening up eligibility during the pandemic might make sense, previous expansions and the prospect of making the current one permanent have resulted in programs straying from their origins and providing meals to people who don't want or need them, he says. By contrast, universal free meals make perfect sense to Hattie Johnson, Director of Nutrition Services for Monroe County Community School Corporation in Bloomington, Indiana. If we're supposed to treat all kids the same, if public education is supposed to be free, and we know that the kids can't make it through the school day without having something to eat, then why isn't it a part of a free education? This story was reported by Nick Roll in Springfield Township, Ohio, for The Monitor.
The University of Texas has been swept up in the nation's racial reckoning. We look at the challenge of embracing unity today with an official song that's seen as a cherished tradition and by some as divisive.
As Robert Reeves' baby son cried for the first time in his arms, the new father grasped for the most comforting thing he could think of to soothe the child. He sang the University of Texas spirit song, The Eyes of Texas. Bound in memories, emotion, and fierce pride of place, the song has been the source of an agonizing debate here over suspicions about the song's origin in the racist era at the turn of the 20th century, when the then UT president told students that the eyes of Texas were upon them, a call to make the most of their education. Rocked by protests and boycotts, soul-searching and bullying, historical detective work, and threats by donors to withhold funding, the administration stands by the song. It commissioned a scholarly study that determined the lyrics are not overtly racist, even if they did arise in a racist era. The rebuttal of one university historian, though, argues that the song may not be intended as racist today. Racism is its origin. For his part, Mr. Reeves, who is a high-tech entrepreneur and donor to the school, wrote in an online post that he supports a change. Tradition, he wrote, is just something you have done for a long time. To be a Longhorn means much more than a song. This story was reported by Henry Gass in Austin for The Monitor.
As a Black master falconer who grew up in the city, he's an empathetic teacher who knows personally the value of second chances and how humans can learn about trust from birds of prey.
With a mother who struggled with heavy substance abuse, Rodney Stotts grew up in Southeast Washington during the crack epidemic. By early adulthood, he reflected his circumstances, dealing drugs, and on course to cross up with law enforcement, he says. Then, by accident, he found work with raptors, rehabilitating injured birds of prey and using them for environmental education at Earth Conservation Corps, a nonprofit then focused on cleaning the notoriously polluted Anacostia River. The first time I held a bird, period, it took me somewhere else, says Mr. Stotts, who became head of the raptor program at ECC, where he continues to work sandwiched between two institutions for at-risk youth. In the three decades since, Mr. Stotts has worked with thousands of people on the streets and in schools, parks, jails, barns, and Zoom calls. Along the way, he founded his own nonprofit, Rodney's Raptors, and earned his falconry license. Along with his four Harris Hawks and one red-tailed hawk, he works with at-risk youth, giving them an outlet, a role model, and a chance to learn to trust others by learning to trust animals. This story was reported by Noah Robertson in Laurel, Maryland, for The Monitor.
Now, commentary from The Monitor's editorial board on tax avoidance. A favorite research topic among economists is whether countries are able to improve their tax collection, especially in curbing legal tax avoidance. Soon, this topic could be global. On April 7, the finance ministers of the Group of 20 Nations said they hope to agree soon on a way to prevent one of the most common tax avoidance schemes, corporations shifting their profits or legal identity to a low-tax country. In theory, the G20 endorsed a global minimum corporate tax rate that might prevent such tax shopping and the resulting competition among nations to lower their tax rates. Its move was made easier by a decision last week from the Biden administration. A minimum rate would help make sure the global economy thrives based on a more level playing field, said Janet Yellen, President Joe Biden's Treasury Secretary. While countries need greater transparency and enhanced accountability in tax collection, a new UN report states all people in a country must contribute towards financial integrity in all aspects of their lives. Corporations might seem like abstract entities, but they are made up of individuals who can live up to that goal. That's our news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Thanks for joining us. Come back tomorrow. We're working on a story about New Hampshire's annual Ice Out, a sign of spring and climate change. When nagging concerns about our ability and worth rear their head, today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares that we can find confidence and inspiration from the realization that God has given us all the intelligence, love, and ability we need. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Finally, a grace note of gratitude to our staff, including today's audio production team, Jeff Turton, Ibrahim Onofeko, and Jim Nong Pong.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor. Copyright 2021.